Today on Maine Calling, the race for Senate is on. It's official. Troy Jackson is Maine's Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate. This weekend, State Democratic Convention finalized the nomination, capping off a frenzied few weeks since allegations against Graham Plattner ended his campaign. Jackson surfaced as the top delegate choice, knocking out other contenders. Saturday's convention has been called a coronation. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today marks 99 days until the general election, and the eyes of the nation are on the race that could determine which party controls the U.S. Senate. Troy Jackson versus Susan Collins. How will the logger-turned-state lawmaker campaign against the moderate Republican who's seeking her sixth term? What personal traits and policy positions do voters care about? Join us for analysis of this consequential political battle and what to expect in the months ahead. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The race for one of Maine's two U.S. Senate seats is set as of Saturday's state convention. Incumbent Republican Susan Collins will face Democratic challenger Troy Jackson. It will be a closely watched and expensive campaign. Joining us today to talk about the race and what to expect, Dr. Ron Schmidt, professor and chair of the University of Southern Maine's Department of Political Science. Dan Shea is the Marson Moeller McNulty Professor of Government at Colby College. And my colleague Kevin Miller is Maine Public's Statehouse correspondent. We invite you to join the conversation. Which issues matter most to you? Do you already know who you'll vote for? And would anything change your mind? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Kevin, so we all heard the state convention was on Saturday. You were there. This was an event that was thrown together very quickly. Did it feel cohesive? Was it upbeat? Did you have fun?
Yeah, I'd say it was definitely upbeat. There wasn't much question going into it about what was going to happen, because Troy Jackson's campaign just had done such a good job making sure that their supporters were elected as delegates. There was one other candidate, Sandra Pelletier, and you know, I would say kind of the response to Sandra was polite and respectful. But you know, this definitely had the feel of a Democratic rally. And Troy Jackson kind of was the absolute star of the show. There were so many people there. There's so many signs. Everybody seemed like they had a Troy Jackson sign. Everybody was wearing Troy Jackson shirts. So long before the voting happened, it was clear that you know, what was going to come out. And then the vote, I think, was 566 in support of Troy Jackson and 5 for Sandra Pelletier.
Right. And everyone there, I'm sure, was waiting to hear what Troy Jackson would say. So when he spoke, was there anything, either what he said or how he said it, that stood out to you?
Well, I'd say that we didn't hear anything new from Troy. I mean, after all, he's been talking about the kind of progressive populist ideals that are at the core of his campaign, like, you know, Medicare for all and workers' rights and abortion rights and taking on the billionaire class. Those were key parts of his run for governor. And he's been talking about them for well over a decade now. So I wouldn't say that was, we didn't hear anything new in that respect. One thing that was notable was how forcefully he went after Senator Collins. He accused her of serving billionaires and corporations that he says fund her campaign. He certainly went after her for a vote in support of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh and how that influenced the outcome of the Roe v. Wade case. So it was kind of a signal that they're ramping up this campaign. They know how difficult Collins is going to be to beat, so they're going to go after her, tie her to Trump as much as they can. And so that was what jumped out at me.
Yeah, I'll turn to you, Ron, about that. What's your take on how Jackson is framing himself as a candidate and the challenges he's going to face, as Kevin said, in this tough race?
I think one of the advantages that Jackson has after 20 years plus is that his frame is pretty well established. You know, the Maine voters have a sense of who he is and the policies that he supports. And even though he has changed his positions on some policy issues, I think his sort of campaign profile, his identity, who he is, has remained pretty consistent over time. So he's got that to sort of help him move forward with energy. It's not enviable to suddenly find yourself as the main opponent in a Senate race after all of these months of everything sort of pointing towards somebody else. He needs Maine voters to have a sense of who he is, to understand what he's saying he's going to do, and to really hear his argument. And I think so far he's showing that he can build on his past to do that. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that's what, Dan, I'll turn to you for that as well. You know, is it tricky for Jackson to position himself as different from Graham Plattner, yet still appeal to Graham Plattner's considerable base? And some of them are angry, too. So how does he walk that balance?
I'm not so sure it is a balance. I mean, it's very clear that he doesn't have the same sorts of issues, negative issues that Graham Plattner had. I think, as been said by Kevin and Ron, he has true populist progressive credentials, and he has them for a long time. Now, he's Senate president, and he's well known in Maine politics circles. But for a lot of voters, he's a fresh face. He's getting a lot of press coverage lately. It surely helped that he ran for governor in the primary, a lot of exposure there. But I think Ron's right. I mean, to move into these households, to these kitchen tables and these cafes, to let people know where he is, his credentials, how he's been fighting for working class voters for 20 years, his story. It's a great story, really, how he jumped into politics. It's really a main story, a great story, not a household story, a household known story yet. But there's plenty of time. There are some number of states that don't even have their primaries until about now. It used to be that campaigns tended to really kick off after Labor Day. I think there's time. I think he's actually in a pretty good position, to be honest.
Well, what you were saying as far as positioning himself, and well, there are Plattner supporters who are saying, in spite of all of that, they still want to write in Graham Plattner's name on the ballot in the fall. Do you think that's just for now, that people are still, it's raw and they're annoyed? Dan, you can continue with this. Or is this going to be something that might actually hurt?
I hope they wouldn't do that. I think what's interesting is political scientists can make an empirical case that some of the blame for the Trump era, stretching back to 2016, may be laid at the feet of Bernie voters that never wound up coming back around to Hillary in 2016. That's a tough pill. That's a bitter pill. I can't imagine that'll happen in this state. I think it's raw right now. After all, he does represent the same issues. I don't think you could slide a piece of paper between the policy positions of Troy Jackson and Graham Plattner. I think that it's bitter now. I think in the end, they'll turn out for Troy.
Well, speaking of Bernie Sanders, Kevin, Troy Jackson did really tie himself to Bernie. He served as Sanders' political director when Sanders ran for president in 2016. And Bernie Sanders endorsed Jackson in his recent run for governor. So what does this mean for him and his campaign? Is that a good or bad thing for him?
Well, I think in some ways it's helped him a lot because that allowed, like, Troy's had a kind of a bigger platform here in the state for years because I think it was back in the 2016 campaign, he introduced Bernie during a rally in Portland. And it was, you know, there was more than 5,000 people there. And he just gave this really kind of barn burner of a speech, and he's known for doing that. So his alliance with Bernie has been, you know, is longstanding. And I think as Dan said, I mean, that his you know, he supports a lot of things that Bernie's been arguing for, and so many of the things that Blattner was talking about all this time. So I think that only benefits him with that segment of the voting population. There are still a lot of voters out there, Democratic voters included, who don't think the Bernie Sanders kind of democratic socialist ideals are the right way for the party. There's a lot of concern about whether that kind of leftward, the party's kind of swing way to the left, how that's going to work out in the fall, especially against Susan Collins. And we're already seeing Collins and Republicans go after Troy Jackson for his alliance with Bernie Sanders. So that's certainly something that we're going to hear a lot more about.
Yeah, she called him a Bernie bro, right?
Right, yeah, yeah, that's exactly.
So on that note, Ron, talk about the importance of Jackson being able to figure out how to embrace his progressive credentials, but still, you know, kind of tack a little bit right to woo the independent vote or whatever he needs to do for this stretch of the election.
Yeah, I think, first of all, on the Plattner front, one of the things that was exciting about that candidacy was the idea of all of this energy being created among people who don't necessarily or aren't necessarily likely to vote in a year when there's nobody running for president. But the disadvantage for the Democrats, as we're seeing now, is if that falls through, the people who felt personally connected to that particular candidate might just stay home rather than involving themselves. I think Jackson has a huge advantage with those people because he is so much running, if not the same kind of campaign, then certainly in support of the same policies. In regard to tacking to try to draw independence, I don't know that would work particularly well. I mean, that we've got a portion of independent voters, even those who lean Democrat, and we've got a portion of even Democratic voters who are part of Susan Collins's reelection coalition. They voted for her after the Kavanaugh vote 6 years ago, and before the Plattner candidacy came apart, I saw a poll showing about 10% of people who said they voted for Harris saying they intended to still vote for Collins. So I think it's unlikely that those people are going to budge if they feel like Troy Jackson is trying to give them a nod towards more conservative policy positions. I don't think that would really work on that part of the electorate. I think maybe what needs to happen is the reverse of what some of the senator's backers are trying to do, and to draw links between her and parts of her party that Maine voters aren't crazy about. Or at least Maine independent voters aren't crazy about. She can try to draw attention or links between Jackson and Bernie Sanders, but he could definitely point to, again, to the Kavanaugh vote and to the results of that, or to aspects of the Trump administration's policies that aren't popular here, and ask if that's really what independent voters have in mind when they think of moderation.
Yeah, in terms of her vulnerability, Dan, I'll turn back to you. You know, clearly a lot of people disgruntled about the war in Iran, high gas prices, inflation, and it's really hurting the Republican Party right now. So how is Susan Collins positioned to not be vulnerable on that front and to appeal to voters who, you know, might be waffling?
Well, I'm surprised it only took us 10 minutes to get to swing voters, split ticket voters. Because that's the key to the whole election, right? So I think for Jackson, what he needs to do is try to compress the margins in rural areas. I mean, some of the numbers that Susan has run up in rural Maine are just astronomical. I was looking at them recently. They're 75 and 80% and 82 and 80, just huge numbers. Now, there are fewer people up there. I get that. And if Troy Jackson, given his roots in the county, his rural roots, can press those margins down to, say, 60-40. If there is the great enthusiasm in Cumberland and York counties that we think will be there, it's all going to hinge on these split-ticket voters, these swing voters that Ron was talking about. So can he thread that needle of exciting progressives in Cumberland, York County, and also appealing to rural voters a bit, and stopping the bleeding of the split ticket voters in the coastal areas north of Portland? That's the key. It seems to me it's going to hinge on how these voters, these split ticket voters, perceive Susan Collins these days. Is she still the Susan that they voted for Joe Biden in 2020, and then they switched over to Susan Collins? Are they going to do that again? I think that's the question.
Well, her what she holds up as her strong suit all the time is how many federal dollars she's brought to Maine and how successful she's been as to in doing that as chair of appropriations. Does that resonate with that group?
Well, let me just say real quickly, so I'll give you a little anecdote on that. It absolutely matters. It's absolutely important. It's a big lever that she's been pulling for years. So I'm a selectman in the town of Mount Vernon, and I can tell you that whenever our little town here, whenever there's a sluice pipe that's washed out or there we need a new septic tank in the fire station, the first comment that someone will make at the select board, and these include Democrats, is, well, we'll have to reach out to Susan's office. We'll have to reach out to Senator Collins's office on this. They don't say that about Angus. They don't say that about Jared, right? It's a very important part of a re-election, her ability to bring home money. And if you doubt that, of course, we know what on coastal Maine, mid-coastal Maine, and Bath Iron Works and so forth. It's a big deal, Cindy.
I love that you have that true insider view on what's happening in towns across the state. But when they say that, is it because it has worked? I mean, they're literally right and get the little thing, get money for that fix.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of federal money coming into fire stations across the state of Maine.
All
Yeah,
right.
and I think the one thing that I'll add there, kind of what Dan is saying, and Dan and I talked about this before. I mean, Susan Collins, her constituent service, she's been doing this for so long, is she's got this incredible constituent service. So it's anytime a town manager reaches out, or even a constituent reaches out, they're very prompt about getting back to it to them. I mean, if a town calls, usually, I think from what I understand, they hear back from Senator Collins' office right away, or within a day or two. So that's something that she can certainly hang her hat on and say, look, this is the bedrock of what I do, in addition to bringing all this money home to Maine, in addition to the influence that I have as a senior Republican. Now the Democrats are going to come back and say she's not using that influence enough to push back against Trump, and that's certainly something that we can talk about. But that's her core argument, is I'm the steady leader this time around for Maine. I'm bringing money home to Maine, and I'm representing the state in Washington in this way.
And this is why she's going for her sixth term, right? Well, we do need to take a quick break. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Our topic today, Maine Senate race that could decide the balance of power in Washington. My guests are two political science professors, Dan Shea with Colby College and Ron Schmidt with USM. Also with us is Maine Public Statehouse reporter Kevin Miller. Share your comments and questions. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And we will go now to a caller. This is Lori calling in from Paris, Maine. Hi, Lori, go ahead.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to just say that as a worker for the Plattner campaign, I like you were all talking about, was, upset. I'm an independent, but I was a team captain here in Norway and Paris, and I just wanted to find a way when the platform separated from the candidate and he withdrew, that we could go forward and have a life with that platform that everybody supported so much. I mean, the most Democratic turnout in Maine Senate Democratic history was kind of cool, and 72% was a huge number of turnout. So we came up with a platform and a movement called the Maine People Powered Movement, MainePeoplePower.net. Anyway, came up with seven issues, and Troy endorsed them, and Neeraj Shah and Shenna. And they all were going to be in forums, but only Troy did, because he was the one who was left after everyone else bowed out. But he attended our forum. So many people called in or wrote in about the war, and that was the main issue. And it still seems to be the one that has the most people upset about Susan, the genocide. The vast percentage of people want no war, no war funding with Israel, and that has been a strong point. So we had seven other issues, all the ones that he's talked about. And I just want to just say to you, I know you were saying there's very little difference between him and Graham Plattner. And I would say the same, except, of course, for the character. And he had to take a distinct step away from Graham because of that. But so many of us really supported that platform, and we found a way to keep it going. And I just hope people pay attention, because Troy is going to be saying those things. He endorsed our platform. He wants it to continue. And he wants to talk against the war. So expect to hear some things that you won't necessarily hear from Susan Collins. She's going to avoid the war funding that she's been, you know, putting so much time and effort into for years. I ran against her in 2008. She was pro-war back then, and she hasn't changed. So that's steady. That's a steady thing she's done that doesn't work for us Mainers, in my view.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts, Lori. Ron, do you have something to say about what Lori brought up?
I think that speaks directly to what we were talking about earlier, right? The question of whether or not the Democratic Party in Maine is going to be able to hold on to the energy that Plattner created around him as a candidate, and transfer that to his successor and to the platform that he helped to advocate for. And you know what I'm hearing from Lori is that there are strenuous efforts to maintain that, and that. That there are people who were involved in his candidacy who felt very strongly about it, who are still really wedded to those issues. So if that remains true, and if that has endurance, I think that's good news for Democrats in Maine, and also for Democrats who are hoping to take the majority in the Senate.
Great. Well, thank you for calling, Lori. And another thing that Lori brought up was the character issue, obviously, that Plattner had to drop out due to, and Troy hasn't quite had that. But let's address the fact that he has had some critical negative press about some incidents. One is, I guess, a reputation for anger issues and lashing out at in the state Senate. Another about financial gaming the system with his home ownership. So, Kevin, are these going to persist as issues in the race?
Well, I think that it's safe to say the Republicans are going to try to make sure they persist. The question is, how much are they going to resonate with voters? I mean, I think, you know, what were the things that we're hearing about Troy Jackson, that he, you know, he's a fiery person. You know, he can get agitated. You know, he speaks his mind. I think these are things that are not a secret to people who are involved in Democratic politics in Maine. You know, he's pretty much, that's what he's known for, is being a very passionate person. You know, he's apologized for some of his past outbursts here at State House. And if, you know, some folks regarded him as being a bit too much of a bully at times when he was Senate president. And again, he's apologized for that, but he said, look, this is, you know, I'm a passionate individual. And you know, sometimes my passions go a little too far, but we haven't seen some of the issues that came up with Plattner, certainly in his past. We have not seen those types of allegations surface with Jackson. Rest assured that Republicans are going to be doing as much opposition research as they can right now, and they're going to try to dig out every single thing from Troy Jackson's past. But Troy's been in the public eye for 20 some years now, and so it's going to be a challenge. I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen in this race? That's the thing. This race has been so crazy all along that none of us can predict exactly what's going to happen over the next 99 days. But Troy is a much, much better known person than Graham Plattner was, who was a total political newcomer.
Yeah, but still, I'm wondering about the vetting aspect, because obviously, you know, a lot of criticism of, you know, what happened with the vetting with Graham Plattner, and saying, oh, Troy's been around, so that's it for the vetting. But he didn't have to go through that kind of scrutiny all these years, even though he's been a public figure. So is there, how does that work? Who, I mean, obviously the opposition is going to be doing the digging, but is or was there some extra vetting that happened before this state convention on Saturday, just to make sure?
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. I'm sure there is always vetting of candidates. I don't know if Ron or Dan can weigh in on this, their knowledge of kind of the opposition research and what happens. But I mean, this process happened so fast. You know, it was less than 3 weeks from the time that Graham Plattner dropped out and Troy Jackson was given the nomination. That's not a lot of time. And it was still, there were 12 candidates in this race up until the weekend before. You know, so some of the better known candidates for governor and Congress were in the race, and then Troy just locked things up in the delegate selection process. So there wasn't a lot of time for vetting. But again, Troy Jackson has been a public figure for some time. So I think that a lot of those things probably have come out already.
Is that your take? Both Dan and Ron, you're nodding. So that is what it is, right?
Okay. I feel like the negative advertising I've heard lately is about Jackson getting mad and throwing an empty plastic water bottle, which after the Plattner campaign feels pretty tame.
Well, yeah. Go ahead,
well,
Dan.
My sense is that this may come down to a referendum on Susan Collins. That is to say, she's been there for 30 years. I think the Plattner and now the Jackson campaigns have been making the case that life in Maine is harder, and that things are not headed in the right direction. And it's been under her watch that these things have happened. So if there is a legitimate, squared away alternative to Susan Collins, then it becomes a referendum on her. So I think what they're going to try to do is, well, he's not a legitimate alternative. He's not an appropriate alternative. It's not squared away. So I do think there'll be a lot of stuff, the best they can come up with. They'll throw the kitchen sink at Troy Jackson. But I think in large measure, voters are going to say to themselves, do I think the future, my future in this state is better with Susan at the helm or somebody different? So maybe, I could be wrong, I'd love to hear what Kevin and Ron think. Maybe it's less about Troy Jackson than it is about the person we know in the Senate, Susan Collins.
Well, isn't there also the aspect that if they throw things at him about his character, they're vulnerable on that front too, right? Her campaign, because if she's affiliated with Trump and you know, the Republican Party is known for not only being alleged, but actually found guilty of worse behavior, right? So it's not something that's very easy to campaign on, is criticism of character.
Yeah, I was thinking earlier about, or I was remembering when Howard Dean's candidacy for president was derailed by an overly enthusiastic yell at a rally. I mean, it's
times have changed.
American politics, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that it's kind of to Dan's point about whether this is a referendum. Democrats are certainly going to try to make this a referendum about Collins and what she's done or what she hasn't done in Washington, especially during the Trump administration. And I think that one of the challenges they're going to have to face, of course, Democrats are going to have to face is, you know, they have a huge financial disadvantage over with Republicans right now. Susan Collins and the Republicans have enormous amounts of money in their bank accounts right now. Troy Jackson is getting into this race, 100 days to the election. He has a lot of catching up to do, and Democrats need to step in. The national Democratic, allies need to step in and help him in that respect to make sure that they can shift that narrative to what Dan is talking about, to make this about a referendum on Collins rather than allowing the Collins campaign to make it a referendum about Troy Jackson and whether he's the best person, the most appropriate, steady leadership that Maine needs in Washington.
Well, Dan,
and
I just wanted to. Okay, sorry, Ron. I'm going to just check back with Dan on something because, your anecdote before about the appropriation being chair of appropriations and she'd bring some of the money, that's her big strong suit. Is there a question of whether she will continue to be able to do that in the future?
Well, it's been raised, right? So she is really close to Mitch McConnell, and she got that post during Mitch McConnell's watch. Now, I'm sure she's pals with John Thune as well, but I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that that could change after the election. Donald Trump sticks his hand in a lot of Senate politics, a lot of House politics. And once he gets that seat secure, I don't think it's out of the realm for there to be pressure to find somebody else as appropriations chair. I'm not saying that'll happen. And I'm sure the Collins folks will likely say that's outrageous. But it is something that is talked about in D.C. I do know people wonder about whether or not she'll keep that post after the election.
All right, Ron, I'm sorry. I cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, that's fine. And actually, I'm glad you did, because Dan's point sort of speaks to this as well. It's so far the advertising coming from the Collins campaign has been a lot less about her opposition and more about exactly issues like fire stations that Dan brought up before. And in that regard, I think that tells us that she sees that as a really strong way to organize her campaign. And so this issue of whether she can continue to do that and to provide that level of support strikes me as existential.
All right, let's get back to callers right now. Jim is calling in from Presque Isle. Hi, Jim. What did you want to talk about?
Good morning. Quick comment first. I'm a lifelong Republican. I've held every position within the Republican Party, right up to paid positions in Augusta, and I've been a warden of the polls. So I prioritize my life this way. Democracy is the most important ingredient in our country, and it must be preserved. It must be massaged to be kept current. But honesty within democracy is the most important thing we have. And she supports this president who has weaponized our judiciary, which is at the core of democracy. Another part, if I can come back to Mount Vernon, the fire department there, if Senator Slotkin had a fire department in the same need, I doubt if the money would flow there because of the person that Colin supports. His name is Trump. I am just appalled that we permit a discussion beyond democracy, and my second highest priority is the killings that have been supported by this president and prior presidents. But when you look at what's happened in Gaza, would you look at tearing up an agreement with Iran and start bombing and killing 257 kids in a school because they didn't have updated information? I am appalled that there's any support at all for Collins.
Thank you for calling in, Jim. And there's a note on Facebook from Joe saying many people feel that a vote for Susan Collins is really a vote for Trump and dictatorship and the end of democracy. So that is one of the sentiments out there. Ron.
I was just, I've said before, I went to grad school when the Cold War was still going on. And I used to feel like the vast majority of Americans would say they supported democracy without necessarily knowing what it meant beyond that was us and not the Russians. And I feel now like I hear people talking who definitely know what democracy means and who don't want it or who think it's a secondary good. So it's heartening to hear a voter talking about the defense of democracy per se as an incredibly important issue. And I think that if that's where voters stand, then that works against anyone who has enabled the president.
All right, thanks. Let's go to another caller. Robert is calling in from Portland. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hello. Hey, thanks for taking my call. The reason I called in really specifically had to do with the opening of the show where Susan Collins was referred to as moderate, and she has been able to hang on to that through so many years. And I just think it's totally false. If she were really fighting for Mainers, wouldn't she be bringing back 2 to 3 times more to this state? But no, she's enabling wars abroad and raising our, gas prices and grocery. I mean, I'm in a grocery store right now, and I'm semi-retired, and I don't have any serious guarantee of good health care when I reach full retirement, do I? And I'd love to hear some of your responses. Thank you.
All right. Who wants to reply to Robert's concerns right there? About, first of all, the moderate question, right? I mean, Susan Collins does vote with Trump's platform the vast majority of the time, but then she is known for sometimes breaking ranks. So does that
The
count as being
senator,
moderate?
I mean, Senator Collins does vote outside of what the GOP leadership wants more than most other members of the Senate. But I think that says more about the Senate than it does about Senator Collins. The level of partisanship in voting is just incredibly high. So we're still talking about a voting record that's over 90% in support of the administration. So there's a way in which you can argue that that's moderation, but it's 21st century Senate moderation, which is a different, I think, than what most people have in mind when they use the word.
Yeah, it seemed as simple 6 years ago during the Gideon campaign. Simply tag Susan Collins as a Republican working with Donald Trump. It's just that simple. He is so unpopular here, and he will lose the race here, and of course he has. And he's so unpopular now, just tag Susan Collins as a member of Donald Trump's team, and you walk to victory. The snag is these split-ticket voters, right? These people, I say that they may not be extinct, but split-ticket voters are on the endangered species list. And you can get a glimpse of them in only a few places in the country, and this is true, only a few places, and Maine is one of them. It happens in Maine. You've got people that will toe the Democratic line, except when it comes to Susan Collins. And that's the bulwark of their support. That's what they're counting on. Their campaign headquarters right now, they're counting on those split-ticket voters, mostly along the coast. If you can't get those to come to Troy Jackson, she's going to be reelected. I just don't think it's as easy as saying, well, she's pals with Trump. She's on the same party. She does the same thing, right? It didn't work six years ago, and I'm not sure it'll work again.
Dan, are you seeing any polling? I know we have to be wary of polls these days, but and where those split ticket voters are leaning right now.
I haven't. I just got off the phone with another reporter looking for split ticket voters, and he's been talking to some. My guess is it's probably continues to be a toss off, probably waiting to see who the Democrat's going to be. I do think my sense is that the push away from the movement away from Donald Trump is so strong here in Maine with the tragedy that happened with ICE and just now the tariffs with Canada is just so strong. The anti-Trump sentiment is so strong in this state that I do think a lot of those split ticket voters cannot hold their nose and vote for Susan Collins this time. But you know, as anybody knows, we were wrong. We did a polling 6 years ago, my colleague Nick Jacobs and I at Colby. And Ron, you were probably right. We were wrong. We had the race wrong.
I think most people were were off last time, and it's just hard to call anything now. Well, we do need to take another quick break. Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We will get to more of your calls soon. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we are discussing the candidates, issues, and dynamics in the U.S. Senate race between Troy Jackson and Susan Collins. Joining me are Maine Public's Kevin Miller, Dan Shea with Colby College, and Ron Schmidt with USM. We invite your comments and questions. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or you can call 1-800-399-3566. We have a question from Susie on Facebook saying, I'd like to know if Susan Collins will agree to a public televised debate with Troy Jackson. Any speculation on that front? Or can we expect a debate?
She's done them in the past. So, you know, I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on her and expectation that she would do it. You know, it depends on how things going. Usually when, and I'm sure Ron and Dan can talk about this, usually when we see candidates not do debates, it's when they feel comfortable with things, when they have a sizable lead, they don't want to lose. And the contrast between Collins and Troy Jackson on the debate stage will be, you know, it kind of, it'll come out their differences in style. And so I wouldn't be surprised if she, I would be surprised if she didn't debate, but who knows?
Yeah, it was interesting with Troy Jackson in the debate when there were still other candidates for the Democratic nomination, that Maine press or Maine's take on how he did was not so critical because he talks like an authentic Mainer and it seemed just fine. You know, in fact, that plays in his favor here. But the national press criticized him like, you know, he wasn't very well spoken. So it's interesting how that differs so much on the Maine stage versus national stage. Let's go to more questions. Let's see. Bill is calling in from Scarborough. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I think a lot of your callers in your panel there, too, are kind of saying it in different ways. But, yes, Susan Collins is campaigning on, you know, bringing in the money, the fire stations, things like that. That doesn't help people live more inexpensively, or it doesn't help the health care and things like that, important things. But I think the bigger issue is that she has failed on her primary responsibility, which is to protect and defend the Constitution. By going along with this administration, there were so many times that she could have done a little more. And I won't go into bucket, you know, I want to go into all the things, whether it's from the immigration enforcement methods to the war or whatever. But, you know, if we can make a change in Maine, we've got to make a change. And other states ought to be voting more for the Democrats, too. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your comments, Bill. A couple times now we've mentioned the ice, especially what happened in Biddeford. How important is that in terms of being a big notch? It's being used as a big notch against Susan Collins, that people have right directly in our neighborhoods, you know, an example of ice overreaching.
I think it's actually going to be really important because of the enthusiasm gap. It's going to be an important part of the drive to turn out on election day. People are very upset about this, very anxious about ICE and happening elsewhere. The Democrats already a bit ahead nationally in this enthusiasm gap. I think in Maine it's going to be particularly sharp. It'll drive more Democrats to the polls, so I think it's going to help.
All right.
Yeah,
thanks.
And I just add there, just on the timing of it, the timing of it could not have been worse for Collins, just speaking politically. Obviously, there's a tragedy of what happened down there. But this came, the shooting happened just days after Graham Plattner withdrew. So Susan Collins went into the weekend basically being able to kind of ride high as, you know, look, I'm the steady leader here. I'm the person that you know, Mainers can trust. And then that shooting happened in Biddeford, and the narrative changed. The news was all of a sudden about what was going on in Biddeford and ICE, and people really directed their anger towards Susan Collins, saying, you're not doing enough to stand up to ICE. You are a part of the appropriations process that is giving money to ICE. So it kind of, she had that almost like a couple of days there where she was benefiting from Plattner withdrawing, and then the ICE shooting happened, and just politically the narrative changed, I felt like.
Yeah, I think that so far, at least, the Collins campaign is investing a lot in the idea that when we think of good representation, we think of practical things like bringing back the, you know, the funding for to help fire stations. But we also, when we think about representation, think about people who were comfortable standing in for us on issues of great importance. And I think a lot of Mainers would reject the model of what ICE stands for and what it's meant to Maine communities as a representative of who they want to be.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to some more calls. Let's see. Roger is calling in from Freeport. Hi, Roger. What did you want to ask?
Hello. Hi. Back in January when the FBI raided Fulton County, Georgia and confiscated ballots to support Trump's claim that he won the 2020 election, I called Susan Collins' office in Waterville to complain basically about that. Before I asked that question, I asked whether she thought Joe Biden won the 2020 election, and I was told by the staffer there that they didn't have a position on that issue, and that's sort of, I was too stunned to kind of go on with my question. So I'm wondering if, I mean, that's become an issue with, you know, nominations, Senate nominations and hearings, and that people have been asked that question. I'm wondering if that's going to become an issue for Susan Collins to answer in this election. Thanks.
What have any of you heard as far as her addressing that election result?
Look, she voted to convict Donald Trump, the impeachment trial. So she has been pretty clear on her position on that. She feels like we have pretty safe and secure elections, I believe. You know, the president's address, primetime address a couple of weeks ago, didn't seem like it helped in a lot of respects for Republicans, because, again, he was raising this issue of the 2020 elections, and that's not what Republicans want to hear him talk about. They want to hear him talking about affordability and how the war in Iran's going to end. So for Collins, you know, it's I feel like she, among the Republicans in the Senate, she has frequently been, you know, I can't remember when last time she's actually been asked, you know, about the 2020 election, but I've never heard her say that Joe Biden was not a legitimate candidate. It was not legitimately elected in 2020.
Okay, thanks. And let's go now to Belinda in Bangor. Hi, Belinda.
Hello. Thank you. I wanted to make just two quick comments. Regarding Susan Collins, I do not see her as a steady leader any longer. She's very manicured. And I think that she does only what it takes to look as though she's still really engaged in Maine. But in my mind, she's no longer a good daughter of the state of Maine. Under Trump, she has really turned face and created havoc for our state. In regard to Jackson, who I met a couple of times and I thought was a really nice, genteel man, I'm happy to really, really happy to support him. But I think his campaign, for those of us who don't know what his accomplishments are, I think his campaign needs to have a good, strong list of what Troy Jackson has done in the years he's been in Maine politics. It needs to be a part of the written campaign as well as the verbal campaign, because I think many of us just really don't know much about him. And Graham Plattner was such a charismatic and strong and vibrant, you know, presenter. I have no doubt that Troy Jackson will follow the tenets of the Plattner ideology, but he's not going to have the dynamic personality that grabbed people so quickly with Plattner. And we need to know what his accomplishments have been so we can trust what they're going to be.
Sure. Thank you for that point, Belinda. And without putting you all on the spot of campaigning for Troy Jackson, but just to list maybe a couple of what are his signature accomplishments in the state Senate. Kevin, go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, I can jump in. I mean, he led the fight. He tried to lead the fight on you know, prescription drugs. You know, he was Senate president during Governor Mills' time here. So he helped on the abortion bills, expanding access to abortion after the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. He's been a tireless advocate on workers and union rights. You know, a lot of his bills did not get through, but he continues to push that. So I think those are all things that we list as there among his accomplishments.
Sure.
He also is.
Go ahead, Ron.
I was going to, as Dan said earlier, he also has a great story, which I think would play well here. One of the things that struck me in the Collins campaign against Gideon last time was her ability to cast Gideon as someone who's not really one of us, you know, sort of an outsider. And that's just not something she's going to be able to do with Jackson.
Yeah, that's a biggie.
Yeah, the Patagonia jacket in the ads was it.
I'm going to quickly, let's see, there's a note from Cynthia on Facebook. She writes, obviously, Susan Collins is the right choice. She has been steadfast in her support of women's rights and marriage equality, unlike her opponent. We only have a minute left, so let's see if we can quickly go to Paula in Booth Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just real quick, what did you want to say?
Okay, well, thank you for taking my call. My question is, there's a lot of talk about Susan's using her, I've been here 30 years, bringing federal dollars into the state of Maine. Call me naive, but who's to say that her replacement couldn't do the same? I know it's going to take time and, you know, to work your way up to the Appropriations Committee. But, you know, my question is, why can't somebody else do that as well?
All right, Paula, thanks for that question. And can you give a 5-second answer, one of you?
Well, it depends if her replacement's in the majority.
There you go. That's the power in numbers always. So thank you. And thank you for such a good conversation to all of you for joining us today. So Dan Shea is the Marcin Mohler McNulty Professor of Government at Colby College. Ron Schmidt is Professor and Chair of USM's Department of Political Science. And Kevin Miller is Maine Public Statehouse Correspondent. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Tomorrow on the show, with cyclosporiasis in the news, we learn about symptoms, prevention, and best practices for food safety at home. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.